This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time is brought to you by Bluehost, a great and affordable service for your blog or podcast. And if you've always thought of setting up a blog but you don't know how, well, Bluehost makes it really easy. It's just basically one click of a button and it will install itself. It's very affordable, just $6.95 per month. You get unlimited storage space, unlimited bandwidth, and a .com domain included in the price. I use it myself, highly recommend it. Go check it out at sqpn.com/bluehost.
What are you doing here? You were willing to die to save us. That makes you a hero. And now we're gonna be heroes.
We're gonna open a portal, throw this thing into a void.
No. You don't know that it'll work.
We have to try.
Welcome back to part two of our review and analysis of the season's finale of season two of Once Upon a Time. We will just pick up where we left you last time, and joining me today for the discussion are Inge, Shelley, Lisa, and David. Deborah, unfortunately, couldn't be here with us, but she is with us in spirit, in Disney spirit. So welcome all of you. And before I bring us back to where we left, I actually had a little bit of voice feedback pertaining to the previous episode, not our previous podcast episode, but the previous episode of Once Upon a Time, second star to the right. And it is feedback about some similarities. Well, you know, let me just play the feedback and you'll discover it yourself and we can talk about it a little bit. It was sent to me by Dan Cillian.
Hi, Father Roderick. This is Dan Cialana from San Antonio, Texas, and I have some thoughts about Once Upon a Time.
Cialana. I'm always waiting for him to pronounce his own name because I always mess it up. Sorry, Dan. Here you go.
The second star to the right episode, I saw a couple of parallels between this episode and not only Lost, but maybe even 24. So first of all, one thing I was struck by was the torture scene with Regina. And it's funny because just a couple days after watching that episode, I'm watching 24 on DVD for the first time. And there's an episode where Lana Parrilla, who plays Regina, she plays Sarah on 24, and she's tortured by CTU for something she didn't do. And it's really interesting because in the 24 scenario, she's innocent and she's really, really scared, and she's being tortured with electricity to get information out of her that she doesn't have, whereas in Once Upon a Time, she's not scared at all at first. At least she pretends not to be scared, and she's really confident, and they're torturing her with electricity to get information out of her. So I thought that was a really interesting parallel there. Don't know if the Once Upon a Time writers were making some kind of, you know, homage to 24, but maybe just a coincidence. A couple things I also noticed, too, in terms of Once Upon a Time being very similar to Lost, when Regina is being tortured, she's talking to her two interrogators and she says, you know what, you guys can't destroy magic. There's only two of you. You can't do it on your own. And it reminded me of the scene in Lost where Jack first encounters the others and talks to them. There's two guys, they're dressed really shabby, and Jack says, hey, there's only two of you. You guys can't get rid of us. There's more of us than you. And then the others light up their torches to show Jack how many of them there are. So I thought that was an interesting parallel too. And one definite thing here, which I don't know is intentional at all, is the idea in Once Upon a Time of the trigger that destroys Storybrooke. And it reminded me of the wheel in Lost, where as a last resort, Ben was able to move this wheel and move the island essentially through time to kind of save the island. So I don't know if there's going to be some kind of parallel there. I'm guessing that maybe the last episode of in this season of Once Upon a Time might end with the town of Storybrooke being disappearing, just like the island on Lost disappeared. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, those are my thoughts. Thank you.
Well, excellent feedback and a great catch. I totally forgot about the character of Sarah Gavin in 24, also played by Lena Parrilla, and about the torture scene. But you might be right. You know, next season
go back and watch that.
Yeah,
this is going to be the longest fairy tale I've ever lived through.
And 24 is going to be back on TV. Who knows? And good catch also with the parallels with Lost. And, well, we know that Lost had the same writers. And so there are many, many elements that they just have taken from Lost and kind of morphed it and transmogrified it into Once Upon a Time story elements. And, I don't really mind. Lost was one of the best TV series ever, so... You know, the more references or the more inspiration, the merrier. And of course, well, we've seen the last episode of the season, so we know that Storybrooke so far hasn't disappeared yet.
But Father, we do know that the writers have said that they like to slip in little inside jokes, inside references. So I did not watch 24, but if Lana Parrilla played a character and she was tortured. Yes, it's got to be a nod. They absolutely had to do it.
I think so, too.
Good catch.
Absolutely. So last time, we stopped, I think, around the time that we went back into the mines. And, of course, Regina is trying to contain this diamond or this glowing thing, whatever it is. And also... clearly is sacrificing herself because it will drain her from any energy that she has left. And of course, that places Henry in a very difficult situation because he might lose her. And we've seen that there is a renewed, let's say, love between him and Regina, calls her his mother. So what's going to happen now? And the first sound clip that I want to play has to do with, with his predicament.
Okay, let's get going. Henry?
Where's my mom?
Regina can hold off the self-destruct device long enough for us to escape, but...
But what?
She won't survive.
No. No!
Henry, I'm sorry. I promised her I'd get you to safety.
But we can't do this. She's family. We don't leave family behind.
I know, but this is what she wants. We have a way out. We have to take it.
We saved her from being killed by the Wraith. How is this any different?
And this conversation is taking place, I think, in front of her? Or was this still at home?
No, this was back at Granny's.
Oh, okay. Right. It's like, that is kind of harsh to, you know, have that discussion when Regina herself is present. But I love that. I love that theme of, you know, she's family and we don't leave family behind. I mean, that has been, I think, one of the leading themes in both these seasons so far.
And Deborah brought up a really good point in the last podcast that this is a Lilo and Stitch moment. This is clearly a nod to Ohana. I love that she caught that.
Now, I have never seen Lilo and Stitch. I always felt that it was more for a younger audience, so I never really paid it much attention.
You would like it.
Yeah? Yeah.
It's one of those ones that has a lot of in-jokes and a lot more Elvis references than you'd ever think possible.
Elvis references? I've
never seen it either.
Oh, no.
All right. Well, that gives us another movie perhaps to review with Deborah for Secrets of Disney, which is kind of our sister show that will be filling the gap between season 2 and season 3 of our Secrets of Once Upon a Time. So definitely interesting to see that movie for myself and see if there are more references perhaps. But this whole episode is about basically mending relationships and bringing people together, not losing contact. And just before this particular scene, there is another very important moment where Rumpelstiltskin is there with what was her
Lacey.
Name? Sleazy, Lacey,
Lacey.
Racy, Lacey. And she knocks over a glass of whatever booze she was about to drink. And she picks up this rag and tries to clean up the table. And Rumpel is suddenly, of course, in shock because that is the only thing that connects him to his son. And she doesn't understand what's going on. And I think that's the moment that he knows or he realizes that, you know, Lacey is not the person that he wants to be around because she doesn't understand where his true love is and doesn't understand, doesn't know his story with his son. And so that is the moment that he takes out the broken cup which I thought we would never see back. We would never see again. And I love that moment.
As soon as they brought out the Stein, they started talking about the magic potion. Yeah. I knew they would have to bring out the cup. He would never discard the pieces of that cup. I was surprised he hadn't magically repaired the cup, but perhaps it was a metaphor that she was broken by being cursed, and so he left it broken because it's not Belle. And that by making – he seemed very resigned when she went to – she didn't understand.
Yeah.
This is not the woman that loves him, right, that he has loved.
Right.
And he just – it was like he almost sighed, like he had to accept that it's time. I have to do it.
Yeah.
It was such a touching, emotional, beautiful moment.
It was. And I loved the way it was played as well, where he pours in that kind of suspicious-looking blue liquid, and she just drinks it. It's like, whatever, as long as it's liquid.
But he poured some for himself, too.
Yes, but he doesn't drink it.
I guess to not look like he was doing something
right,
wrong.
Right,
right. I was to a point, I was kind of amazed that he would just accept something from the dwarf. I'm like, okay, here's a glowing blue liquid from people who have been angry at me for years. I'll drink it.
He depended on the kindness of others.
He trusted.
He trusted.
I guess so. And you know, it's not like he had many options there. It was his way to turn her back to who she was. And I thought it was very well played. Where it's very subtle, but she was immediately Belle again. And not that she said anything different, but it's just, I don't know. It's the magic of acting, I guess.
And she had Lacey's memories. She knew everything that had happened as Lacey. Yes. And I thought about that. But David, when he woke up from the curse, he remembered. I mean, they all remembered who they were during the curse. So that at least is true in the story.
Yes. And it kind of makes sense that if it's a potion that will restore your memory, that it doesn't erase another part of your hard drive. I mean, that would be a bit strange. So,
yeah, like I said, they're always there. The person is always underneath the curse. And so they'd remember the curse.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, David said, we are both. And I'm kind of interested in how that plays out with Belle. So Belle and Lacey at the same time. So that can be very interesting.
Well, she changes clothes. Did you notice? She's wearing black ripped shoulder sleazy dress. And later in this episode, she's in a bright blue coat.
Oh, wow.
Like she's covering herself with the dress. So she puts on this coat to go outside, I suppose, but it represents the change. But
yeah, they use the clothes to tell the change between Belle and Lacey originally. And so now they used it again to show that she was different.
Let's listen to the sound clip where the change actually happens.
That cup again. What is it?
It's something from my past. From our past. I'm sorry. Let's not fight.
Notice how the music changes as well. That's pretty subtle. I didn't realize it when I was watching the episode. Now that I listened to the audio, I was like, wow, the music just completely changes in key and everything to enhance this moment of change.
He apologizes to her. You stopped it right before he says it.
Uh-huh. What does he say?
He apologizes. I didn't want to wake you up to die, but I needed you.
Yeah.
I needed you. And that's such a moment for Gold, for Rumple. To realize that he relies on another person, and not just this trying to get his son back, but the love of another person. I needed you.
And that is a moment very out of character for him, because he is always about, tat for something? There's an expression.
Being in control.
Being in control.
Tit for tat.
Tit for tat. It's always like, we're always in a business relationship, and this is the first time that, you know, she doesn't owe him anything, but he needs her. So it's kind of like he is in debt in a certain way, and only love can fill that gap, not a transaction anymore. So I really like that
moment.
And
in apologizing, he acknowledges that it was a selfish thing to do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he apologizes to her.
Which means that he's aware of that. He's aware of his selfishness. But he also is aware of his own weakness, that he can't live without her. And,
I wonder if he needed to think that Bay was lost, because he has been pursuing that idea of getting his son back for so many centuries that there was no room for anything else. So Bay needed to get off the radar in order for him to get room to see other things.
Perhaps, yes. Yes. And I love the parallelism with what's happening in the mine, and between Henry and Regina and the others. They too realize that they can't just leave Regina behind. They need her. Henry needs her to be around. And so all the others, because they're family, of course, want to grant his wishes and you know, they change plans. And that is, again, it's not something that they owe to Regina. It's not something that she deserves or anything. It's an act of love. It's an act of mercy. And that is what changes her. That is what starts to bring her back to the light side. And I love that exchange later on between Regina and Henry in the mine. Let's listen to that.
I love you, Henry. I only wish I was strong enough to stop all this. I'm just not. You may not be strong enough. Maybe we are.
And there you have it again. It's if you're alone, you might not be able to survive this. You might not be able to face the consequences of magic, and you won't be able to pay the price. But together, we can do this as a family. And that was such a powerful moment when Emma steps in and also accepts her magical self. Because we've not seen her using magic that much. We know she knows that she has it. We know that she has it. But it's almost as if she is very reluctant to use it. But here she is, let's just join forces. And you've got the symbol of evil and the symbol of goodness becoming a family again. And that's what kind of saves the day.
Yeah, love is stronger than magic, because everybody thought, including Regina, that there's nothing that can stop this trigger.
Yes.
Pure love from both mothers for their son can.
Yes. And it's I think it's something that Mr. Gold or Rumpelstiltskin said, perhaps even in season one, that there is a magic that is stronger than the magic that they know of, and very similar to the whole approach of J.K. Rowling towards magic, where it's always, I mean, the big message of those books is magic is only magic. It's a tool, and it can be used for good or it can be used for evil, but there is something much deeper, much stronger, much more powerful than magic, and it will ultimately, that will be the determining factor in saving the world. It's not going to be magic, it's not going to be revenge, but it's going to be love, and I love it that you know, is also part of the Once Upon a Time universe. And I think it's because it's true. it's absolutely true. The other story, of course, that's going on in the background is the story of Bay and Hook. And so we go back to the ship, and let's listen to Bay confronting Hook about, what he finds out in the innards of the ship.
What's this about, Bay?
You found this on your desk. It's my mother. How'd you get it?
Bay.
How? You're the pirate that killed her.
I didn't kill your mother. Your father lied to you. He was too much of a coward to tell you the truth. He tore her heart out and crushed it in front of me. And I've spent every moment since then wanting revenge.
Stay back. You used me. You wanted to kill my father.
Yes, I did.
You tore apart my family. As sure as if you ripped her heart out yourself.
Hey, don't.
Take me back to my real family. The Darlings.
I can't.
You see the parallel with Gold and Belle? Here, too, Hook gets all emotional. We finally discover that he's more than just this you know, smuggler, Han Solo type guy. And there is emotion in his voice. And there is tension as well, because he's been using Bay for his own, you know, self-interests. And Bay senses that and is mad. Although my first reaction was, well, you know, shouldn't he just team up with Hook because they both hate Rumple now? But then I was like, well, no, I think that Bay feels again betrayed. He feels used. He feels not loved, which was, of course, the big separation with his dad. It's so Hook is just like, you know, he thought that Hook could be his foster parent. And now he discovers that Hook really didn't care for him. Just use him as a tool.
I disagree with you, Father.
Go ahead. We like that.
Okay, so we were talking about family and love. And in the previous episode, our podcast, we were talking about Hook. And I said that I think Hook really, he loved Mila. And I think he's conflicted when Bay comes on board the ship and he realizes this is Mila's son. Because he was originally planning to use Bay against the Dark One. Mm-hmm. But this is Mila's son, and there's a love there, and he is fond of the boy. He doesn't want to turn him over to him. He wants to be a family and have a part of Mila here with him. When he tells Bay, "I didn't kill your mother," Hook says it with such agony in his voice. I mean, mm-hmm. he is just so torn up about it. He's telling him, he's putting it all out there.
Yeah,
"I didn't kill her. We fell in love. You just played it." But what does Bay say? He's not mad at Hook. He's mad at his mother. He says, "She abandoned me." So Bay has been abandoned by both of his parents. It's not enough that Rumple chose magic over him and let him go into the portal. But now he finds out that his mother walked away from him.
Mm-hmm.
"Well, we talked about coming back and getting you when you're old enough." No. You've used me. You want to kill my dad. You've torn apart by taking my mother away from my father. You tore apart my family.
I think that's why he was so driven to get back to the Darlings. He said they were his real family because, I mean, they weren't flesh and blood, but they took him in. They chose to take him into their home. And then they didn't have any reason to, but his own flesh and blood abandoned him on all sides.
And there was this very touching moment where he's, you know, he's stolen the bread and then the mother of the house welcomes him and you totally expect her to expel him and hand him over to the police. And then instead, you know, you can stay as long as you want. So, yeah, I that's the first time that he is loved for what he is, you know, basically an orphan.
But, yeah, unconditional love.
But he is mad at Hook for, you know, using him. and I don't think that he knows or feels that Hook, does love him. Or at least initially might have thought of him as just a tool to get his revenge. But then later on he starts to care for the boy. I remember this conversation when his shipmates try to convince Hook to, you know, hand over Bay to the Shadow or to Peter Pan or whatever him is. And Hook then says, you know, anyone who disagrees, just walk the plank and pray the mermaids have mercy on your soul. Two things that I like there. It shows that he actually believes in something. He's not just this cold, calculating, smooth guy, but, you know, he talks about mercy, about souls. And it also is a reference, of course, to the whole mythology around evil mermaids, because mermaids were not like the mermaids we know from The Little Mermaid. Most mermaid stories were terrible. They were like the sea witches or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, in Greek mythology, you have sirens.
Yes, well,
which are basically mermaids.
Kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
And then we've seen the Harry Potter version of those mer people or mere people. I'm not sure how to pronounce that, in the lake, where it's kind of referring to that same evil origin of the mermaid stories, which made me wonder, you know, if Hook is so clear about mermaids being evil and dangerous and taking away your soul, if they're going to bring in the Little Mermaid story like they promised, and I thought that we would get that this season. Are you listening, writers? How are they going to do that? I mean, because the Little Mermaid story, it's like all cozy and friendly underneath the sea. And
oh, gosh, don't predict they're going to make her bad. That would be horrible.
No, she's going to be the one that's enamored by the humans with their two legs. She's going to be the friendly one, the one that wants to liaison and be kind with the humans. And she'll probably be whatever turning point something will happen under the sea, and she'll be the one that saves them. Or something.
The parents that reprimand their daughter are just going to be so much more evil than in the Disney version.
Evil or strict or two worlds that just don't coexist. It could be either way. So, while y'all were discussing that, I went and looked up. I went and looked up season 2, episode 4, Hook, because I wanted to know if Bay had seen his mother with the pirates, and he did. When we are first introduced to Mila drinking with Killian Jones, and Rumple comes to her and kind of sheepishly says, you have responsibilities, you need to come home, and she dismisses him. Bay is there, and when he says something to her, that's when she looks contrite and she gets up and leaves and goes home with them. So yeah, he was aware that the pirates had his mother and that she had left. So that wasn't the first time he's met Hook. It's just the first time he's not the first time he's seen Hook. It's the first time he met and realizes it's the same pirate.
Right, and heard what was really going on between Hook and his mom.
Yeah.
It's getting complicated there, that relationship. And
then there was go ahead.
There's a clear parallel in this story between Bay, you know, being alone, and Henry being, or at least risking to be alone when everything gets destroyed. Henry too will be an orphan and will be gone. And I think that's why Hook at one point says that he understands Emma. Or I think it's Emma who says that to Hook. You know, we understand each other. And I think it's because the both of them ultimately have been in a situation where, you know, a child might be alone, might be left alone.
Yeah, and also
Neil, Hook, and Emma have all grown up without family, strong love.
And they want to prevent Henry from suffering the same fate, which in turn, of course, is what makes them decide to go and help Regina, which is saving ultimately the town. Had they not tried that and just opened up a portal and jumped in it, then there would be no... You know, Canada would be without a TV series.
Well, and trying to save the town, and trying to save Regina at the possible expense of saving the town, they discuss that, and Mary Margaret says, "We have to do this," and Archie says, "Well, it's the right thing to do. Well, this is what we should do. Let's do the right thing." And yeah. Emma, I just don't want him to be alone. So we can get away. We can get away. But Mary Margaret says, no, you know, there are other paths, harder paths. We have to take the hard path.
That was very biblical.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Killing Cora was the easy path. And she's also kind of reflecting upon her own sin in a way. She's like, I took the easy path. There were other ways to neutralize
Cora.
Killing
was the easy path for her.
Take the hard path.
Yeah, she also said we cannot build our future on Regina's blood.
Yes. Yeah, that's
a very
powerful strong
idea as well.
Yes. This whole episode was just so well written. So it encompassed all of these major themes in so well. It was fantastic.
Well, it was written by the two main writers, of course. So it's kind of they are masters when it comes to this. They've conceived the entire plot probably of the how many seasons we will get. So they know which main themes they need to hit because it's part of what they want to tell with this story or with this TV show.
I mean, and that's even the scene there where Hook says to Emma, you know, you know, it's worked well for me. I can live with myself. Y'all are crazy. You know, let her die. And she says, listen, you can join us and be part of something, or you can do what you do best and be alone.
Yeah.
But it's not until he finds out that Henry's father is Neil that he agrees to go forward and do this.
Yep. So. Yep.
And then later, Hook gives him the opportunity. You don't have to leave this ship. This ship can be your home. This ship can be your family. You just say the word. I can change for you. And where has he heard that before?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Bay doesn't believe it. You know, he refuses to believe that Hook can change. Which is a contrast with Henry, who has always believed that people can change. And even after everything they discovered about Regina, and including her, you know, killing an entire village in Anakin Skywalker evil style, still he has hopes, and he still forgives his mother and wants to be with her and wants to save her. So he definitely is a savior archetype here. And it's that belief that she can change that actually makes it possible. If you, and I think that's true. That's true for education, for any situation. If you don't give someone the space to grow by basically refusing to forgive or refusing to believe in someone, then that person won't be able to grow. Whereas if you create space by forgiving, by hoping, then that will actually be an impetus for other people to grow.
That's really interesting that it's Henry, the character, that recognizes that and uses it and acts upon it. Neil and Emma both, his parents, have the opposite. They are always wary. They're always looking out for number one, and they don't look for people to be able to change. You know, Emma and her, I can tell when someone's lying because people don't change.
Mm-hmm.
And when Bay leaves Hook, when he gets off the ship, Hook is upset. You can tell right there. He loved Bay, yeah. Neela's son, and it hurt him to be abandoned by the boy almost as much as everybody else has been hurt by being abandoned. But that's a turning moment for Hook. He's definitely upset. So it's interesting that it's Henry, though, that can see that in everybody else.
Well, isn't it because Henry is one of the few characters that has always been surrounded by, well, that's not true because he was living with Regina, and that wasn't really working well.
She loved him. She just didn't know how to love him.
Yeah, he didn't always have the best opinion of her too. But I mean, I remember in the first season where he would like, you know, you're not my. I can't remember if he said you're not my real mom, but he called her the evil, you know, evil more than once. So
But of course, little boys. Will say that they hate their moms and their moms are evil on a regular basis, even if they're not really thinking that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
my son would never say that.
Something as simple, a plate of Brussels sprouts can cause that.
but I think that the reason he's so kind of wide-eyed is that he's raised in a kind of perfect town, but was affected by the curse, so people were. Behaving and perfectly because of the curse. So that made him probably trust people because he had never seen people betraying each other and that kind of stuff. But Emma and Neil, growing up in the real world, got scarred by that, and Henry didn't.
Mm-hmm. And the moment that Hook is changing is, I think, when he sees how much love there is between Henry and Regina, and it probably reminds him of what, you know, is still somewhere hidden in his heart, and the same thing happens with Rumpel. It's when people are confronted with love, undeserved love, free, you know, like a gift. That's when it touches their heartstrings, and they start to realize that that's what they're missing. That's what they're yearning for.
I think
that you're right. Go ahead.
For the Hook, I think the game changer was that he heard from Emma that Bay was Henry's father, and that Bay died, and so he went off. And then you see that's also explains the flashback. So he reflects on his relationship with Bay. And then, and in the end, he decides to turn around because he regrets what he's done, probably, and wants to, yeah.
Definitely. At first, he says,
maybe I just needed reminding that I could
care
about other people, that I could be part of something bigger than myself, part of a family. And this is clearly a family. Look who all gets on this ship at the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
It's the family.
Yeah. And of course, you've got this very strong moment where this sense of family is amplified, and you almost hope that this is the end of the episode, right? Where Emma steps in, and together with Regina, her arch enemy, the two moms join together for, you know, the sake of their son, and they are able to contain that powerful magic, neutralize the evil diamond, and it drops to the ground. And that's when they look around and...
We're alive!
Emma! We did it.
Yes, we did.
I gotta hand it to Henry. He's right about a lot of things.
Yes, he is. Isn't that right, kid? Henry? 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 Emma, what is it? They took him.
I'm sitting there watching this episode. I'm like, no! Oh, come on! Just give us a break! Come on!
There is no chance of any happily ever after.
Yes,
season finale,
no. That was so cruel because it happens right away. I mean, there's not even a moment of victory, and that's good storytelling. Come on!
I was wondering when they took him, you know, when they snatched him, they were just hiding in the wings, waiting to see if they stopped the trigger.
I guess so.
I think they have pushed out for a while because of the blast or something like that.
I don't know. I mean, it seemed to me that they were done and they were just trying to get away. And, well, turns out that they have seen Henry, and that's all of a sudden that they realize that they have found something much more important than, you know, their original sacred mission of destroying magic. And that's, of course, when we all start to think, what? How do they know about Henry? What's going on here? Why is he so important? Why is it even more important than their original mission? But the biggest question is, of course, how do they know about this boy? And what are they going to do with him? And then, of course, we see them opening up that portal using one of their beans, and they jump in. And that's the end. We don't know where they go. We don't know. Apparently, I mean, they're so opposed to using magic, and now they're using magic themselves. What's
Again.
The logic?
And they knew how to do it.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't get it. And why would they risk jumping into a magical portal if they don't know where it's going? And if
But I think they do know where
you
it's
think?
Going.
I think they'd have to, because, I mean, Hook knew, must have known how to use it, because he went to Neverland on purpose originally.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Balefire just wanted away and wanted away in a world without magic, and it worked. Yeah. He just didn't know exactly where that was. So they must know where they're going.
It's almost as if they've been there before.
Emma and Cora and Mary Margaret and Hook, they needed a compass to get back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they didn't use a bean. What I understand from the bean is you hold it, think about where you want to go, smash it on the ground. And then you go there, and the portal that Emma used in the beginning of the season wasn't created by a bean,
mm-hmm.
so they needed
that makes sense.
And this is a great moment in the arc of the episode, because it's something I was reading an interview with George Lucas. And he was talking about his story arc. Sorry, I have to put in the obligatory Star Wars reference here. So he was like, in a story, you always want to move to a point where it gets worse and worse and worse. And when you think it's the worst situation, you try to make it even worse for everyone involved. And you think that this is the end. And that's kind of where we are right now. And that's, of course, when you have everybody watching and you want to know how this is going to resolve. And of course, the problem is that they thought that they had another bean, but Hook took it away. And that's when everybody gets desperate. I mean, they might have saved Storybrooke, but Henry is gone and they can't follow him and they're again separated, and the family that was a family for 2 seconds is not a family anymore. And what now? And that's, of course, when we see, and this was kind of expected, Hook turns around. What is that in the distance? Well, duh, it's a pirate ship, right? And he's coming back. And it's kind of like, it's classic storytelling and it needed to happen. But I'm glad that he came back.
What is that? What the hell are you doing here?
Helping.
Well, you're too late.
Am I?
I thought you didn't care about anyone but yourself.
Maybe I just needed reminding that I could.
There's that phrase. I just needed some reminding that I could change. So Hook has changed. Is he going to be changed forever? We will have to wait and see. But at least for now, he seems to be with the others. And then they are about to leave. And all of a sudden, everyone is like, okay, let's go. Let's go save Henry. And I was a little bit surprised by the suddenness of Gold / Rumpel and Hook making amends.
Right. It's
like, okay, well, we're good, okay? Let's go. Yeah. Let's work together.
So are you done killing me?
Yeah.
Yeah, but we didn't have any more time. We had to move it forward. They'll definitely come back and have this be a theme in season 3.
You think?
Yeah, but think about who is on the ship. Regina and Emma, who have been fighting Ilja, and Regina and Snow have been fighting. Regina and Mr. Gold, all those people, and they are on the ship, so they cannot go anywhere. So that can be very interesting.
It's very complicated relationships, and they're going to be in a situation where they have to unite and work together to save Henry. Mm-hmm. And that's going to bring them together in a unique way. And I like the way they redeemed, to some extent, Regina in a lot of people's eyes to save the town, to save Henry. And obviously now Hook and Gold, their interests are aligned, as Rumpel would say.
Yep.
So they, as long as their interests are aligned and they have a common goal, they should be able to work together. But the interesting thing will be, how long will it take to find Henry, to recover Henry, to battle whatever they find in season 3? And then will their relationships, their working familial relationships with each other have gelled a little bit, or will they then revert back to their petty, evil, bickery nastiness?
I guess it's all going to depend on whether or not their mission succeeds. And if they can somehow save Henry and save Balefire, then of course all will be well. If something goes wrong or someone betrays the others, then things are not well. But they do have a new and a common enemy, of course. They've got Tamara and Greg. And so there's nothing better to unite a group than to have a common enemy. But I was kind of secretly hoping that they would just give us 1 minute where Hook and Gold kind of like, I don't know, have a confrontation and then say, okay, let's go. But we get none of that. And we are, the chat room reminds us that how awesome of a pirate Hook is, because he's able to sail away and turn his ship around. Not to mention that it was there was no wind or anything and the sun was shining. But, you know, he's able to do that alone without a crew using only one hand. I mean, that is awesome.
Walking uphill both ways and yeah.
Right.
We really underestimated the guy.
Regina pulling on a rope and somebody else was working a sail.
Yeah, later on. Yeah, they're pulling on all sorts of ropes and you're thinking, where did they learn that?
They just want to look busy, I think.
Oh, you mean when he first sails off?
Yeah, when he sails off alone.
He throws it so far, like over to the side. And I'm thinking, wouldn't you just throw it in front of you? I mean...
Anyway,
it had to be dramatic.
It definitely
is. Not as much fun. But Father, you just mentioned Neil and them finding out that Bay is still alive. And I wonder how long it would be before they actually discover that. Because the way they left this episode, the ship and the charming family are headed to Neverland to rescue Henry.
But wait, do they know they're going to Neverland?
Yes, because he pricked his finger on the globe.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
And it showed Neverland, so that they know where they're going. And Hook, you know, Hook recognizes it. He looks very pensive, very, oh, crud, I got to go back there. Oh, man, this is not going to be good.
Those darn shadows and mermaids. And
they don't know about Neil. I love that they threw that little 10-second clip in, 20-second clip in to show us where Neil is. So season three is set up perfectly.
So where is Neil? Is that just
Enchanted Forest?
He's at the Enchanted Forest.
So Mulan and Aurora and Philip.
Yeah, how was that Philip?
Yeah, how I did they get Philip? He was kind of undead the last time they were going off to save him.
Like remember we learned that he still might be in existence somewhere because of the Wraith thing. And they were headed off to go get him. Well,
so that's convenient. They pushed all that off to season three.
Yeah. That's kind of nice, though, because we speculated whether or not we'd see them again and what role and how are they going to do that. And now we know, you know.
We're all excited. We want to wait and see.
Definitely. But it was strange to see him there with Sleeping Beauty, with Mulan. And why was Mulan, by the way, why did she cover her face? Was it because they couldn't get the original actress or something? I was like, what?
Maybe they couldn't get her for the 5-second cameo.
It's against the flies because if you...
Okay.
In warrior mode. Whenever she's in battle mode, she puts the veil over her.
Yeah, we saw her a few times like that.
But I totally expected Bay to be back in Neverland and that they would joining there by following Greg and Tamara and Henry. But instead, he's somewhere else.
Much better.
Well, yes, of course it's going to help the first part of the season of season three because now people are separated and they need to find each other, which has always been one of the narrative tricks that they use. You know, there's now they somehow need to find each other, but how? According to the chat room, actually, the original actress was working on another show in New York City. That's why she.
That would explain.
Okay.
Thank you, Nani.
I hope that the actress is going to be back though for the, because I don't know, So Henry is taken to Neverland, and then to make it even more complicated, then we go back to Bay in a flashback where we discover that he is not the boy that he is looking for. And then, of course, we get...
This is not the boy you are looking for.
He's not the droid. Move along.
Sorry.
All right, move along.
It's your lucky day.
But this, of course, is what's the best moment of the episode where, you know, my mind went into speculative overdrive.
Is it the boy? The one he wants?
No, it's not.
It's your lucky day, boy. You get to live. Put him with the rest.
It's your lucky day. You got to live. That is exactly what Mr. Gold tells Hook on the boat the moment he pricks his finger on the creepy globe.
But put him with the rest. How many boys do they have?
Yes. Yeah. What's going on?
Another question is, this is happening in the past.
Yes.
And we see 50+ years ago, and we see a picture of Henry.
Yes. And it looks just like him.
Like he isn't born yet because the kid that you just rejected, that's the boy's father.
Yeah.
I know the whole time continue, but there's no time in Neverland. Time doesn't pass. It doesn't exist. It's kind of like Storybrooke being trapped in time, and they're trapped in time, and time moves another realm.
So would that mean that
Storybrooke,
would that
I mean,
mean
Neverland.
That we can travel from our time to Neverland and it would be exactly the same time? I mean, that would be in a perpetual loop or something? Could the picture be from the present and brought to Neverland to whatever past that is? But it doesn't make sense.
And so that would make my head hurt because if Captain Hook was bringing them back to Neverland and time never changes there, then he'd probably run into himself because he's been there before. Yeah. I'm like, oh, that hurts my head.
Well, it's going to be a time paradox.
Oh,
it's what Marty McFly was dreading.
Well, these are the writers of Lost. I'm sure that they, with their all their noses, are going to start bleeding. Is that how it works?
Perhaps. But I was thinking there's another explanation for this picture. I mean, they're looking at the picture. But what if it's basically a picture of Bay when he was still younger, when you know, because kids look like their father, right? So perhaps,
or their mother.
Perhaps it isn't.
There's
Henry.
Only 3 years difference between 3 years difference between Bay and Henry at this stage. 11 and 14 or 15, yeah. Because he had a birthday. So he's 11,
uh-huh.
And then 14 was when he went to the Ogre Wars, and it's been a minimum 6 months from then. Yeah. So 14 or 15 years. I don't know that it would change that much.
Yeah. So it does seem to indicate that there's going to be some time traveling.
Yeah. I also did some speculation before this episode was aired. I wrote an article on SQPN.com, and I speculated that the seer got it wrong, or the Rumple has this prophecy wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So it will, a little boy will be his undoing, but this little boy is not Henry; it's Peter Pan.
Oh, that could be too. That's interesting.
Because we've talked about how and Belle, when she tells him goodbye. Doesn't she say the future isn't always what it seems?
Yes, yes.
Because he brings up the prophecy again. The boy is my undoing.
We totally skipped over that moment. And Belle and everything. Let's listen to a sound clip. There.
Well, Greg and Tamara weren't working alone. Others will follow.
No, we can't leave people in danger.
After we've gone, follow these instructions. It's a cloaking spell. It'll shield the town, making it impossible for anyone to find.
Then how will you find your way back to me? You're not coming back, are you?
The prophecy. The boy is my undoing. But he's also my grandson. I must save him. I must do this to honor Bellfire. He's gone. I didn't even get the chance to say goodbye.
So, it seems to me that Rumple knows, or Gold knows, much more about this home office.
Yeah.
He knows about Peter Pan. He knows about the Greg and Tamara, and that there will be more. I mean, he states it as a fact. There will be more. So how does he know that? And why hasn't he brought it up before?
And why does Belle have to do the cloaking spell? Why not go to Mother Superior and ask her to do it?
Well, I think that's just a convention to basically make sure that they don't get too many people on this, you know, in the next season.
I think also maybe Mother Superior's magic is another kind of magic. So another kind of cloaking spell.
Could be.
But also speculated, so there's this prophecy that this boy will lead you to your son. And he also will be on your undoing. But Balefire and Rumple, they met face to face, but they didn't come to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So you also can see in the past episodes that, so they finally, after centuries, Rumple has found his son back, and they hardly spend time together. And then Balefire drops in through a portal.
Mm-hmm.
So what if the prophecy is meant to mean that the boy will bring the son together so that they really connect to each other again, like they used to?
Could be. Well, yeah, I mean, the undoing could be the undoing of the evil one, and not the undoing
Rumple. He could just be Rumpelstiltskin and not the Dark One anymore.
Yeah, and maybe the getting together, so bring the son, this young boy brings your son together, is just you reunite him again in a true way,
with
true love. It doesn't mean that you find each other like here he is, because they were in the same room, but they didn't connect to each other, if you know what I mean.
And Belle. I mean, she all of a sudden seems to know a hell of a lot of things about the future. It's like, it's not always, it's almost as if she's prophesizing here. The future is not always what you think. It could also be because she knows Rumpel. She's been with him for a while, so she knows how he thinks and is always thinking in terms of calculating and predicting and being in control, whereas she has had the experience that the future is sometimes totally not what you expect, you know, being locked up in a psych ward for I don't know how many centuries. So...
Yeah, she also remembered the episode with Robin Hood. She was right about why Robin Hood stole that, what was it? That magical wand.
Mm-hmm.
And so and she corrected him. So yeah, you're wrong about this. So she...
she knows people.
She knows people, yeah. Better than they know themselves sometimes.
Yeah. I still found it... It almost felt as if... This was the moment where the writers were telling us, you know, for a while we're not going to be in Storybrooke because they leave Belle behind to basically, you know, watch the house, make sure that no one gets in. But yeah. There is not a real, there's nothing in terms of a quest or anything that necessitates us to go back to Storybrooke in the next season. I mean, ultimately, eventually they will, but... Unless
the Home Office sends people to investigate where Greg and Tamara are. And we do occasionally have a couple of scenes or episodes where we find out how Belle and Mother Superior and the dwarves are and Granny and are responding to that threat. It may not be the primary focus, but it could still pop back and show it to us to remind us that there are still loved ones back in Storybrooke.
Could be. I mean, it could also be that for a while we will not see anything because, you know, this is also a very elegant way to get the minor characters out of the way. And we talked about last time how the actress that plays Ruby is leaving the series because she's got a job in another television series. So this might be a very elegant way to let us forget about all those minor characters. And then at one point, they can do something to Storybrooke. So it's been safe, it's been cloaked. And then, you know, for some reason, the Home Office people still are able to break the spell or whatever and might put all those characters in jeopardy. Which might in turn be an incentive for our main characters to return to Storybrooke to save the day at the end of season 3. So, or perhaps, Star Wars reference number 2, they will make the people in Storybrooke suffer and somehow magically, because they're all family and connected, they will feel that wherever they are in Neverland, and it will be for them, you know, the pull that they have to leave Dagobah and return to Cloud City. Sorry. I will not do this again.
He got distracted there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also read some rumors about there will be a new series or miniseries airing in the fall. And that will cross over, according to some rumors, into the main storyline of Once Upon a Time.
You're not talking about the Wonderland series, right?
Yes.
Oh, you are. That's not a rumor. We talked about that last week.
No, it's not. There is a spin-off, but it also crosses over, apparently,
you think?
Into the main in the main storyline.
Oh, that would be interesting.
There was a rumor that who was it that played Cora? Was it Barbara Hershey?
Yeah.
That she might make an appearance.
It's confirmed that she makes an appearance.
Oh, it is.
Good,
okay.
Good.
Probably in flashbacks.
Well, you have to.
Or flash forward.
We might want to...
Jefferson.
I don't know which way it goes.
There's also a confirmation that Neil, so the actor who plays Neil, is bumped up to a series regular for season 3.
Well, that's kind of
that
obvious.
That makes sense that we'll
see
that
him. Totally makes sense. I mean, he's teaming up with Sleeping Beauty and Mulan and what's his name? Richard or Philip?
Philip.
And think about it. We got rid of the Huntsman. We got rid of August.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of you need another male character to stick around besides.
Well, yeah, and I mean,
you know, and Rumpel.
And Henry's
you need a third.
Henry's still rooting for Emma and Neil getting together again. So we need some resolution there too. But that's good. I'm starting to really like that actor as well. Now before we talk a little bit about that. You know, Once Upon a Time in Wonderland spin-off series. Did you notice how the ending of this episode was an homage to the ending of The Pirates of the Caribbean number 3, where they create a portal and it becomes this big vortex and the ship disappears in it. And I was like, this is totally Pirates of the Caribbean. Now I want to see it again and see if Pirates of the Caribbean 4 might give us some clues as to what they might want to do. Although the ship itself, it still looks fake to me, that pirate ship. It still looks like it's some tourist knockoff, like super cheap thing.
The part you see where he's steering the ship and that kind of thing, that's clearly on set. And there are some distant shots from the ship sailing around in port. And you can see that's not a really big ship.
So. Yeah, no, it's tiny. And there's this puny little cannon on the back of the ship that looks like, come on, it's a toy cannon.
Yeah, that ship is a coaster. So it's not a tall ship like we see in like Pirates of the Caribbean. So that ship, figuring in the port, that's maybe able to stay near the coastline, but it's not able to cross seas. So,
I'm still really irked by the lack of quality of the special effects. I mean, come on, when they're on the boat and they're trying to move, they're all trying to make us believe that they know how to navigate a ship and see the wrong.
And I actually can navigate a sailing ship. So
and then the colors in the background are wrong. The whole kind of green screen thing.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Even I can do better. No, that's not true. But it's really subpar. And I think it's I almost feel that is a bad job. You can't do that nowadays. I mean, there are so many TV. Even some children's series have better special effects than Once Upon a Time. So
it reminded me of those that old Hercules TV show in the mid 90s that special effects just on that level.
Yeah, I don't understand because sometimes they do good special effects, but I don't know. It might be just because they're always in a rush. But I thought we were past this stage, and there were several moments in this episode where I was cringing. I was like, oh please. Hopefully in season 3 they will do better. And then, which brings me to the trailer for Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, where I thought that the special effects again looked terrible, especially the green screen stuff. I mean, there were some great moments, and I was like, wow, this looks good, and then, oh gosh, no, ugh, yuck. Use some magic
there.
They
said they've only filmed 19 minutes so far of the episode, episode. So they really, I mean, that's not really very much. It's less than half. So it could get better.
I hope so.
Well, if they do end up having a smaller cast, maybe they can afford a better budget for special effects.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the problem. You have big names, so like Barbara Hershey as a cast, and then something has to suffer, and that's usually the CGI.
Who does the special effects for this series? Now I want to know. In the meantime, let me play the trailer, and then we're going to briefly talk about this spin-off series and how it might relate to the main series. But I also want to end our episode in a bit of discussion about him, about Peter Pan or whoever he is, that's going to be the end of the episode. So first, let's listen to the sound of Wonderland. Of course, if you want to see this for yourself, and you should because it's a very visual trailer, then just go to YouTube, type in Once Upon a Time in Wonderland.
Alice. When your father brought you to us, you claimed you traveled to this place, a Wonderland, where you had miraculous, strange, and terrifying adventures. An invisible cat, a hookah-smoking caterpillar, food and drink capable of altering your physical form, a murderous red queen. And you encountered all these things by literally falling down a rabbit hole. You tell us where you really were.
With a friend.
So we're both strangers in this most strange land.
Strange is one word for it.
Wondrous.
Dangerous.
Alice, if you wish to be released from this facility, you need to...
I don't wish for anything.
This has something to do with the genie you believe you met.
You found my bottle, Alice. Anything is possible.
Well, I do have what I came for.
proof that all this is real.
So who's this proof for? Husband?
No.
Good.
Good.
I mean just that you're not separated from your love. That'd be a terrible fate.
The proof is for my father. He thinks I'm insane.
So you're risking your life for someone who doesn't believe in you? When you really love someone, you don't need proof. You can feel it.
You told your father that you set him free, that the two of you traveled from world to world, fighting pirates, swimming with mermaids.
You fell in love.
I've never met a human quite like you, Alice.
I've never met a genie quite like you.
Our hearts are entwined. From now on, I'll know when you are near.
When your father found you, you were inconsolable.
Alice, run!
You said the love of your life was gone. Murdered.
It's not what I said.
Alice, you were an ignored little girl who wanted to be loved. So you created a fantasy land full of characters who'd help you become who you wanted to be. You wouldn't be the first child to do this. You're just the first to grow up and still believe it was real.
I don't believe it anymore.
You know you're lying. You still cry out for him in your sleep. We have a new procedure that can take away your pain, make you forget whatever or whomever you're holding on to.
Does it hurt?
Just sign here. Tomorrow your life begins anew.
Cyrus.
Alice. She needs help.
He's alive!
That's impossible.
You know as well as I do, Alice. Nothing's impossible in Wonderland.
You're late.
To you, everybody's late. Once long ago, I got you back your heart. Now, you need to help me get back mine.
It's a pretty cool trailer for if considering that they've only filmed 19 minutes. I was like, they're done. I mean, just air this. It's we're ready for it.
Yeah. So it's a very visual trailer. So I will make sure to add the trailer to the post where we post this episode of the podcast. So
yeah.
If you listen through iTunes, you may want to go to our website to listen to see the trailer.
Right, it's onceuponatime.sqpn.com. Okay, your general impressions about this. David, what did you think of this? I think you're muted, by the way. Or asleep. Or in a vortex, or in another dimension.
Muted.
Oh, there you go.
Muted. That was keyboard. Keypad was stuck. Get microphone on.
So what did you think?
I thought this was really interesting. I gotta admit, I wikied this spinoff a little bit myself. But there are gonna be some crossovers, but this is like Victorian back now.
Yeah.
This might cross over to back when Balefire had first arrived in England. A little bit, but this is gonna be different, and I don't know. I'm looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. It feels different, but also there's similarities. But it feels more like a movie almost. But perhaps how the trailer is cut. But they're doing some interesting things there with the camera movements and everything, and the whole acting. I mean, it's almost as if you're. At one point, it was like this is like a classic, like psych ward. Gosh,
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I heard that.
I want to say it felt very big. You know, unlike Once Upon a Time, it just had this kind of big quality to it. Yeah. So,
and I like that theme.
I think it's meant to be completely independent, isn't it?
Yeah, that was the story. But now I saw also on the official Facebook, the question from, do you think it will cross over? And I was like, so they are feeding that rumor.
Yes.
From the official channel. So
maybe that's the best way to get Once Upon a Time fans to watch it.
I guess that's they need to somehow tie us into that. But do we know anything about the time frame of this story? And I mean, we see Wonderland, I saw in the notes that there was information about this actually taking place in Wonderland in Storybrooke time, like in our time.
It's kind of conflicted because it also says that it starts. So Alice lives in Victorian times. Hmm. So that's in the 1860s until the turn of the century. So that's roughly the same time that David already said, where the Darlings. It's also set in England.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of the same era, the same country. Mm-hmm. So I can see that crossover. And so the Wonderland and everything, how it looks identical as the Wonderland we know from Once
Upon a Time. Yeah, it looks just as bad as the original Wonderland with the blue sky.
A flash of the Red Queen. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, but there's a Red Queen and a Queen of Hearts. Apparently, they're two separate characters.
Yeah. They're separate characters. And so I was like, okay, so if you have small children, you may want to preview the Red Queen because she barely has clothes on. So.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
I'm reading the Wikipedia entry about this, and the premise here is described as follows. In Victorian London, the young and beautiful Alice tells a tale of a strange new land that exists on the other side of a rabbit hole. An invisible cat, a hookah-smoking caterpillar, and playing cards to talk are just some of the fantastic things she's seen during this impossible adventure. Surely this girl must be insane. Her doctors aim to cure her with a treatment that will make her forget everything, which is kind of similar to... wasn't there a spell, a Rumpelstiltskin spell, that did the same? And you could forget, that's how Snow forgot about Charming. Alice seems ready to put it all behind her, especially the painful memory of the genie she fell in love with and lost forever, the handsome and mysterious Cyrus. So what we see of that love story is taking place in a flashback. But deep down, she knows this world is real, and just in the nick of time, the sardonic Knave of Hearts and the irrepressible White Rabbit, who looks very scary, by the way, save her from a doomed fate. So part of the series is going to be a flashback, and part of it is going to take place in, well, I guess, Victorian England, or at least in the a while ago. But there's nothing that seems to indicate that they will travel to our times.
Those are fan theories that at some point they will arrive in Storybrooke.
Yeah.
Could be.
I kind of think that they want to have their hands free, and just placing this in the past is going to make it a lot easier to.
I also haven't read any filming taking place in Steveston. That's the town that's dubbed for. Storybrooke.
Neither have I, but it's interesting. This was conceived in February of 2013, probably even before the ratings started to go down, and so this might have been in a very optimistic time where it's like, yeah, let's do a spin-off, and there was still a lot of faith in the series. I still think that I have high hopes for season 3.
It can rekindle the love for the main brand again, because people who probably don't see Once Upon a Time may see this series and want to see Once Upon a Time. So I think it's a good thing that it airs in the hiatus, and I also hope that the writers have learned from the feedback that they have probably also have seen that there are too many characters so far in Once Upon a Time. So they need to prune the cast a bit.
I think they just did that.
Did it, yes. Just stay under that cloak. Don't go outside. Don't go in front of any camera because the bad guys of the Home Office will take you. But I'm glad, actually, because that was one of the problems that I had this season, and I've said it many times, and our listeners know I was like, so wait, who was he? Is he a brother of the father of the neighbor of the?
Yeah, but they woman but they go to a new land, so that will introduce new characters. So I think, so I was like, I don't hope they start all over again with introducing lots of new characters.
I would be okay with lots of characters as long as they all belong to the same group of evil lost boy ninjas, and you know, just keep it simple. I care for the main characters and their relationship. That's what makes this last episode so good, because it refocuses on the people that we know and love. And I really don't care that much about the Mad Hatter or, you know, any of those side characters. Or even a guy like Whale, I was like, yeah, whatever. It's too complicated. So this is going to air in the fall. I initially thought it was going to air in the winter time, you know, after...
No, it's the winter.
Oh, that is winter.
It's the break. So okay. I think they said December, January.
Oh, well, I'm reading here it's going to be in the fall, so it might be concurrent.
That's the fall TV schedule. So in the fall, they set up a new scheduled series and everything.
Okay, perhaps. But let's go back to this final episode and to the final part of our discussion here. Peter Pan? Is it him? Is it someone else? Is it the shadow of Peter Pan? Is Peter Pan going to be a boy? Is he going to be an adult? Is he going to be an old man? Is he going to be Rumpelstiltskin? What are your theories about Peter Pan?
I think he is not there yet. He's a shadow. So I think he, what the Lost Boys refer to, is a shadow. So he, yeah.
But is Peter Pan? I mean, it doesn't make sense to me that the shadow didn't speak. We know that people get people get separated from their shadow, and so I kind of feel that Peter Pan has to be around, and perhaps him being evil is part of that being separated from his shadow. But I mean, are we really talking about Peter Pan, the Disney Peter Pan? Is he going to be a good guy? Is he going to be a bad guy? I mean, Hook is definitely more sympathetic now than the Hook from the Disney movies. But I feel that they can't really mess up Peter Pan because he's so beloved. It's almost as if you all of a sudden Snow would be this evil witch, you know. I kind of feel that they can't do that. But perhaps they will. There was an interesting theory. Let's hear your thoughts about this from James in the chat room. And before we started recording this episode, he was like, well, what if Peter Pan is going to be merged with another fairy tale character that actually has a dark side and also whose story has to do with abducted children? Any guesses who he might refer to? Pied Piper.
Oh, the Pied Piper?
Pied Piper. Oh, sorry. Yeah. I thought you'd pronounce it like Pete. But Pied Piper... It's the story of the Pied Piper of Hameln, the Rattenfänger von Hameln auf Deutsch.
Then I recognize it.
He is the subject of a legend concerning the departure. I'm reading this from Wikipedia. Departure or death of a great number of children from the town of Hameln in Lower Saxony, Germany, in the Middle Ages. It's a story that has been told over and over again. There is a poem of Goethe that talks about it, but also the Brothers Grimm wrote their version of this story. And so for those of you that don't know, this in our area in Europe, it's very, very popular. It's basically the story of a guy who gets hired to rid a town of a infestation of rats, and then they refuse to pay him. And then he uses his flute to lure the rats into oblivion, and then he takes away all their children. In the same way that he got rid of the rats. And so, I mean, that is a very dark story about someone who originally seems to be a savior, then turns evil and starts abducting children, basically. And I was like, wow, you know, and James made a good point. He's like, Peter Pan, Pied Piper, same initials. I mean, could they bring these two characters into one, just like, as they've done with several other characters on the show as well? I thought it was a very, very cool theory.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time that they've merged stories.
Yeah, and we've not seen this fairy tale before, and I think it would be a great way to bring back, you know, some new fairy tales, and use that as a actually is something that motivates the plot.
Yeah, how popular is that story in the United States? Because there are some fairy tales that are very popular in Europe, and everybody knows about it. And when I talk about it to Americans, they have never heard about it. So,
I mean, David, you tell me. I think that it's. I think people know what the Pied Piper is, with the flute and the kids and dancing through the town. I mean, that's.
That was one of those. That was actually kind of an odd character because I mean it was payback. You know, mm-hmm. took all the children as payback.
Mm-hmm. That's not a happy ending. The story.
No, well, it's a happy ending tragic for him, but nobody else. he got rid of all the rats, and then the townspeople wouldn't pay him, so he took the kids.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's a fairly well known.
Yeah,
you know,
and for those of you that have seen Shrek Forever After, the movie, Pied Piper appears as a bounty hunter paid by Rumpelstiltskin to hunt Shrek and Princess Fiona. Well, of course, Shrek is not a Disney property. They must hate Shrek because it's constantly doing parodies of the Disney world. But it's definitely something that, you know, even younger people know. So I wouldn't be surprised if we get that, you know, if Pied Piper is somehow merged with Peter Pan. But how exactly, I don't know. I still really am scratching my head about this picture and how this ties in. I mean, if it's Peter Pan, then it probably has to do with this home office, and it all has to somehow relate together.
It's almost like Greg and Tamara know that Henry is the boy Peter Pan is looking for.
Yes.
And that's why they take him and jump through the portal.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm like, they are so anti-magic. And they, first Tamara tries to get rid of Emma by throwing a magic bean, so use magic. Then they set off that trigger using magic again. Then they disappear into a whole true magical land. I was like, How does that compare? Because they hate magic. They don't want to have anything
let's try
to do
to
with magic.
Their sacred mission.
I wondered if Neverland was the home office.
I'm not sure.
See, we still don't even know that him is Peter Pan.
Yeah,
right?
we're not sure.
And it's also,
I mean, it's also they've left a lot to find out, you know, in the fall when it comes back on.
Yeah, isn't this weird that first Greg has Tamara in his phone as her?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and now we are talking about him.
Yes.
I was like, what?
Well, and of course it was implied that they don't really know who the boss is of the home office. I was trying to deduct. I was thinking, okay, their big motivator was their sacred mission of getting rid of magic, and they both have reasons for that. We know Greg's reasons. We don't really know Tamara's reasons. And then the second thing is, now they say finding Henry is more important than their sacred mission. So just thinking in their logic, if they want to get rid of magic, could it be that Henry could be a person who could not only combat magic and get rid of all these occurrences of magic, because they've been at this for centuries, but that Henry might be able to stop it at the source? And so could that relate to Neverland and to Peter Pan being kind of like where it all began? And Peter Pan is this like mastermind. Is this, you know, Peter Pan almost sounds like the devil in a way. And so
maybe he's looking for maybe Peter Pan's looking for a way to get rid of magic because he's been trapped at Neverland and he can't get out.
Well, I mean, Rumpelstiltskin, we first thought he's kind of a diabolical, satanic person. But now we discover, well, there's good in him. And, you know, he's gold is calculating, but he never really is as evil as he could be. So what if season 3 will introduce a character that is way more evil than Rumpelstiltskin, is almost like Satan, you know, like the source of evil? And that Henry is the opposite of that. Henry is the savior archetype. We've said that many times. So what if the home office understands this and is like, well, Henry is the only one who can stop him, who can stop the source of all, the root of all evil. And so they are not going to do harm to to Henry, but they just need him. They need him to get rid of magic altogether, or evil magic. I don't know.
Yeah, but does Henry, how you say that, does he want to be used as a pawn? Because he has his mind of his own as well. And he's, you saw how when they were making that potion that and that and I think some necklace or something like that, when he went off to that netherworld, he was so interested in what gold was doing.
Mm-hmm.
They made the stuff for the spinning wheel to make Prince Charming fall asleep. So he was so interested in magic, and he's also seen how magic can do good. So yeah, he may be able to get rid of magic, but I don't think he will do that.
It could always could also mean that instead of using Henry as a hero or savior, he could be a sacrifice. He could, you know,
like Isaac.
Well, yeah, they might think that if they will give him what he wants, he will stop whatever he's doing. So that too might be because it's pretty evil, you know. Even if you're pursuing a morally justified cause in your own eyes, it's still evil to abduct a kid, you know. And there's no the goal doesn't justify the means. So we'll see. I just hope that the actor who plays Henry will continue to grow in his acting skills. Let's put it that way. That the company that does the special effects will take advantage of the summer to go kind of brush up their skills. Actually, I found the company who does it, Zoic. They did the special effects for the series Flashback, or was it Flash? It was called Flashback, right? The one
Flash
that,
Forward was
or
it?
Flash Forward, the series that ended after one season.
Yeah, Flash Forward.
I think it was.
Yeah, so
it's all their fault.
It's kind of the company itself. It's not a. I mean, they did some big stuff, but it seems to me that this is kind of like experimental for them. I found an article where they're like, "Oh yeah, we're so excited at being able to do all the special effects for Once Upon a Time. We're using Zoic's environmental unification system, Zoos, and they do real-time camera tracking and rendering of virtual environments on the set." Well, yeah, that's kind of what we're looking at. We're looking at entirely virtual sets. That's why it looks so bad. This is not The Hobbit. So, oh my gosh. Anyway, let's.
Oh, my husband and I spotted the actor who plays Henry.
Uh-huh.
What he did before Once Upon a Time. He was Don Draper's son on Mad Men.
I've never watched Mad Men.
Oh, wow.
Is that any good?
On AMC, on the channel that it airs on here in the States. Yeah, he was the second son. They're now on to the third actor playing the son.
Okay.
But yeah, we were watching it, and my husband suddenly goes, "That's Henry!
That's him!" Well, now I have to go back and watch 24, and it's like, "Oh, that's the evil queen!"
I've got them all on DVD. I need to go dig it out.
Oh, boy. Especially now that the series is coming back for a final round, or at least, well, you know, like an extension. That's going to be
interesting. Yeah, that'll be
good. All right, let's wrap this up, ladies and gentlemen. It is time, and we've been going on with this for way too long, but yeah, I know our listeners, they like this kind of stuff, especially because it's, you know, it's the last episode of season 2. So, again, want to remind you that we're not leaving you alone. We're not abandoning you. In fact, if you like these kind of themes, if you like Disney, if you like fairy tales, go over to disney.sqpn.com. And of course, when there's news, we'll report it, and we might even record an episode or two in the interim period. So stay subscribed to the feed. That's the magic of podcasting. As soon as there is news, as soon as there's a new episode, we will be there for you. And, well, if you are wondering what to listen to now, we got so many shows on sqpn.com that I think you will enjoy. I'll just mention a few since we're wrapping up, and this is an advertisement. just a couple. I do a weekly show called The Break. I do movie reviews. I talk about video games. I think you'll like it. We have a number of affiliate shows that I think you'll like as well. We've got a lot of shows dedicated to entertainment. We've got Secrets of Disney. We also have a huge archive of episodes about Harry Potter, if you're into Harry Potter. It's a great way to kind of relive the books and the movies. So, I don't know. a couple of hundred episodes even. Secrets of the Hobbit, we're going to continue that one now that the second movie is ramping up. We have Secrets of Middle Earth, where we take you to Middle Earth and we walk around in Lord of the Rings Online, discovering the sites and the locations. We've got Secrets of Tintin, which I do together with David. And we are going to start a series about Star Wars. And we are launching that actually next week. So if you are into Star Wars and you finally want to understand why I keep making all these Star Wars references during the show, which are totally inappropriate, then you might want to check out that as well. All that will be on sqpn.com. Any final wishes for our listeners? Lisa?
No, just everyone a good summer. And I'm looking at the fall schedule, and there's going to be so many new shows on, so I'm really hoping that a lot of them are good this year and that Once Upon a Time continues to keep us asking lots of questions.
We know that we get at least one more season, so we're going to enjoy the heck out of it. David, final words.
Hope everyone also has a good summer, and it's going to take forever for the it's going to seem like forever before the next TV show Once Upon a Time, because besides Once Upon a Time and maybe like one other show right now, every other show I watch is a kid's show, so I'm going to be looking forward to something different.
Well, I'll keep you busy. we'll get going with Tintin again. Inge, final words.
Yeah, it's a long wait, and I also hope there will be something worth watching also during the summer. And I hope to see everybody when we resume podcasting again in the fall.
Absolutely. Well, I just want to thank everyone for following us in this season, and you've been an awesome audience. We've looked at the downloads and your kind reviews on iTunes and the feedback that we got, and it's just so great, because that's kind of that's why we love doing this podcast, because we're all geeks. We all, you know, get all excited after each episode, and we can't wait to get together on Skype and talk about this, and having you listen to this is an honor. And we really appreciate you as an audience, and we hope that you will stay in touch with us and let us know your thoughts, and if there's news, let's get back together and have some fun speculating about season 3 of Once Upon a Time. Again, thanks for listening. Bye bye, and see you soon, and may the force be with you, and live long and prosper,
and never fall off.
Exactly, all that. See you soon. Bye bye.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.